Goals. That's what we like to do on this show. Find the comedy goals. I just like
non-fungible as a word.
It is a good word.
It's a wonderful, it just has a good mouth feel.
La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
The Senate GOP says Congress can't do anything about Clarence Thomas's ethics mess. And so they both, none of them seem that concerned
all
about
fine.
What's been happening with our Supreme Court.
Clarence Thomas is like guns. Can't do anything about it.
Nothing to see here.
Nope.
Nothing to see.
It's all fine.
The Senate Judiciary Committee on Tuesday held its first hearing on the Supreme Court's mounting ethics woes, response to a recent string of stunning revelations that Justice Clarence Thomas failed to properly disclose a property sale and hundreds of thousands of dollars in luxury gifts from Harlan Crowe.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Talk about a Marvel villain name.
Nah, he'd be DC. He sucks.
Okay. do you hold that? Do you think the villains in Marvel are stronger than the villains in DC?
In the movies, yeah. They've been more captivating in the films than
Interesting.
The...
But what about the actual comic books?
Comic books? No, the Joker's my favorite bad guy.
I was going to say, that feels...
Because he has no superpowers. He's just disgustingly smart and psychopathic.
Like a dog. If I caught it, I wouldn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. It's just all part of the plan.
But the hearing didn't reveal anything new about the court's ethical issues.
Conundrum.
No justice agreed to appear for testimony. Chairman Dick Durbin politely requested Chief Justice John Roberts testify or appoint another justice to appear. But Roberts declined, citing separation of powers concerns and the importance of preserving judicial independence. Durbin took issue with Roberts' refusal to appear in his opening remarks. So I guess I have a game for us to play, but I just want to open it up to see any thoughts. We haven't talked much about this since the initial story broke around Clarence Thomas's very special relationship. But
with Mr. Crow,
it feels like there should be some oversight, or they should be willing to, at least in good faith, re-examine how they oversee each other should be, right?
Yes, absolutely. No branch of government should be. That's what they call it, checks and balances.
Yeah.
So the fact that they all refused. Whew, that makes me mad. That makes me really mad.
What would that be? Instead of the blue line for police, is it the black line?
No, this country could never give that much respect to anything black.
But you know what I mean? What's the line that they're not crossing? What's their picket line that they're all in solidarity together?
I would say, I got nothing here. I want to say brown line because of the gavel, but that's
I call it the green line.
Call it the yellow line.
It's about money. It's about money.
Money.
It's about money. It's the green line.
Yeah. It's. I want to try to use separations of power to keep myself in a traffic court. That would be amazing. Your Honor, I'd like to start. I have a human freedom, America. I don't have to be here. It's ridiculous. It's disgusting, and it to me shows a dangerous precedent that the court can go towards to say, not only do we not have to show up, we have no oversight. What are you talking about? There's no oversight. That's ridiculous. That's nine little kings and queens sitting on those seats then.
Well, and especially because their popularity is in the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and their popularity was in the toilet even before all of these ethics things popped up. And so you'd think, especially since Chief Justice Roberts seems concerned about public opinion of the court's legitimacy, he would try to have some kind of good faith appearance or plan to try to restore faith, and it does not. I have not heard anything as far as like, yeah, we're going to work on this.
But so the public has a low opinion of them. So what? They don't answer to anyone.
I know.
Yeah.
They don't answer to anyone. They're appointed for life. They can do whatever they want, and they like things just the way they are. Thank you very much. We are the only, the Supreme Court is the only body in this country that has no ethical oversights. It's outrageous.
We don't need your help. It's just us.
So I thought,
trust us.
Trust us.
It's fine.
So I thought we'd play a game. And hopefully we can, I don't know if we're going to get through all of it in this segment. So we may have to finish it on the other side. But I found a non-exhaustive list of Supreme Court justice scandals since 1991. And there's 8 of them.
Okay.
There should be 9.
So this is what we're going to do. The two of you have to blindly rank them.
Okay.
So it's 1 being the worst or the most scandalous, 8 being the least scandalous, but no number can repeat.
Okay.
So I'm going to read one and you don't, without knowing, if you can't remember what the rest of them are going to be, because you're, you know, history is hard to remember sometimes, you have to blindly say 2. Something may come along later in the line that you're like, that should have been a 2. Too bad. So pick.
One is the worst.
One is the most scandalous.
Okay.
So we're starting strong. Number 1, Clarence Thomas allegedly lying under oath during his 1991 Senate confirmation hearing. During that, Thomas claimed he didn't sexually harass Anita Hill or any other women co-workers during his time at federal agencies. When there's evidence to refute that, Thomas did, however, say that the allegations were part of a, quote, high-tech lynching. He said, it is a message that unless you kowtow to an old order, this is what will happen to you. You will be lynched, destroyed, caricatured by a committee of the U.S. Senate rather than hung from a tree.
Gah. Give that language a 1. Sheesh.
All right. Where do you rank it?
I'm ranking that at a 6 just because he ain't the first prospective judge justice to lie on the stand or lie in the confirmation hearing. So I'm giving that one a 6.
All right.
I also landed on a 6.
6.
There we go.
Yep.
All right. Number 2, Brett Kavanaugh allegedly lying under oath. Where to begin? Justice Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed in 2018 despite credible allegations that he sexually assaulted women in high school and college. One of his former roommates said he lied under oath when he claimed not to know the meaning of a sexual euphemism, while other classmates said he lied about never blacking out from drinking at Yale, among many other details. The FBI received more than 4,500 tips about Kavanaugh and did nothing with them beyond punting them to the Trump administration, since the agency said it was only conducting a routine background check. In January, a surprise documentary premiered at Sundance detailing other instances of sexual misconduct that the FBI did not investigate. Kavanaugh also appears to have lied under oath about his work in the Bush administration during prior confirmation hearings in 2004 and 2006. Where do you rank that?
I gave him a 5.
I was going to go 5 as well.
Wow, you too.
Yeah.
Just great.
Like mine.
I'd
also call him incredibly hack, but whatever. Go on.
All right. Number 3, Amy Coney Barrett ties to an alliance defending freedom. Justice Amy Coney Barrett has connections to the right-wing Christian legal group Alliance Defending Freedom, the same group that argued the case that the Supreme Court used to overturn Roe, and is also representing the plaintiffs in the baseless but still hugely consequential abortion pill lawsuit. The organization paid her for speaking 5 times at its Blackstone Legal Fellowship, a summer program for law students meant to inspire a, quote, distinctly Christian worldview in every area of the law. ADF is also the legal counsel in a nominal free speech case that could actually destroy non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people. It's called 303 Creative v. Elenis? Barrett was also a member of a religious group, People of Praise, that expelled members who had gay sex. In 2022, former members of the group called for her to recuse herself from 303 Creative. She did not. During a 2017 confirmation hearing for a spot on a lower court, Barrett claimed not to know that ADF had an anti-LGBTQ agenda.
What?
Barrett getting confirmed in late October 2020 after millions of people had already voted in a presidential election, an election that would oust a man who nominated her, is just an eternal stain on this woman's tenure.
Three.
I've got four.
Four.
Give it a three.
All right. How many? Yeah, we still got time. We got 3 minutes. We may not get through all of them. We'll do the other half on the other side. All right, number four, Clarence Thomas's connections to a GOP mega donor. This one we know because it's the most recent. Well, is it the most recent? There's actually some more on here.
Gorsuch. Yeah. Gorsuch.
Yeah, he's on here.
Gorsuch.
All right, for years, Justice Clarence Thomas failed to report that billionaire and GOP mega donor Harlan Crow took him on luxury vacations, or that Crow bought property from him at inflated prices, including the house where Thomas's mother still lives and pays zero in rent. This isn't the first time Thomas has had to amend his disclosure forms. In 2011, he faced scrutiny for not reporting hundreds of thousands of dollars of his wife's income from conservative groups, including the Heritage Foundation. Thomas then amended 13 years of his reports.
I give that a one.
I give that a four.
Did you say four already?
I said three, you said three. Five, and six.
Okay. This is your one?
This is
your
my
big
one.
Your big spot?
This is my big one.
All right.
I feel like,
what do you save your one for?
I feel like there's just like in 1875, a man shot another man in the Supreme Court and did nothing about it. And
it only goes back to 1991.
Never mind then. I'd like to redo my numbers. All right.
We will do this one and then finish the last three on the other side of the break. Number five, the Ginny Thomas of it all. Justice Thomas's wife, Ginny, has not only earned millions from conservative groups, but she's also a Trump-supporting MAGA activist who wanted to overturn the 2020 election. She sent nearly 30 text messages to former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, urging him to help overturn the election, and also badgered state lawmakers about it. Here's one of her texts to Meadows, quote, "Biden crime family will be living in barges off Gitmo to face military tribunals for sedition." Ginny has made headlines not only for being on the exclusive email listserv of Thomas's former law clerks, but also for sharing pro-Trump messages. We'll end there because we got to wrap up. But where do you put Ginny Thomas on this list?
One.
She gets a two.
One and one. Two. All right, we got three more when we come back, and this is the game, a non-exhaustive list of Supreme Court justice scandals since 1991, ranked. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I'll bust some head because I am the judge.
He is the judge. He is the judge.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
All the way to the Washington. French town, people are so overdone. Where the money gone, where the people run. I work in a struggling, all the sweat and swing, but I make no tings. Stop making a big bank run, you are fooling here, no one. Corruption.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. He is Greg Bach. She is Jane Matinair. And we are playing a game of going through a non-exhaustive list of Supreme Court justice scandals since 1991. And we are through five out of eight of them. Mm-hmm. And the rules are you can't double your numbers. So you mm-hmm. have to rank them one through eight without necessarily knowing what's coming next. So, this is number six.
Okay.
Samuel Alito allegedly leaking a 2014 opinion. Now, this one's not proven yet, but an explosive New York Times report alleged that Justice Samuel Alito leaked the Burwell v. Hobby Lobby birth control decision during a 2014 dinner with a pair of the Supreme Court Historical Society's evangelical Christian donors. Alito was the author of that ruling, as well as the Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe, a draft of which was leaked in full to a journalist in May 2022. Huh. But Alito has denied leaking either and called the Dobbs leak a grave betrayal. That made the conservative justices targets of assassination, and he's still whining about it to this day. Methinks he doth protest too much.
I gave him an 8.
Oh, that wow. was a 2 for me.
That wow.
Oh wow.
That's
big,
2.
Big difference.
Yeah, wow. 2.
All right. Well, we got 2 left. Next one is Neil Gorsuch failing to disclose a real estate deal. Justice Neil Gorsuch sold a massive property he co-owned to the CEO of a law firm that often argues cases before the court. But he didn't name the buyer. Only reported income from an LLC. The 40-acre Colorado property had been on the market since 2015, and Greenberg Traurig CEO Brian Duffy bought it just 9 days after Gorsuch was confirmed by the Senate in 2017. Gorsuch has previously disclosed the names of people who've given him things like a fishing rod and a pair of cowboy boots, but no name this time. He made somewhere between $250,000 and $1 and $500,000 from this sale.
I call that's 8 for me. That's
not impressed.
Oh, see, no. And I gave it a 3.
No.
Yeah, well, the tables are turning.
Tables are turning. All right. This is the last one. So what number do you have left? This is you. You're going to have to put it.
I have 7.
I have 4.
All right. Let's see if you feel confident that this is where this should land.
Yeah.
John Roberts' wife earning millions from big law. Not even Chief Justice John Roberts has avoided the appearance of impropriety. His wife, Jane, was paid more than $10 million in recruiting commissions over 8 years from, quote, elite law firms that also had business before the court. Naturally. Roberts' own disclosure forms only list Jane as receiving a salary as a legal recruiter and don't detail the amount she's earned or which law firms the money came from. Seems fine.
I'm fine with my 7.
I give it a 4.
You'd give it a 4.
I have to give it a 4. I have to give it a 4. And I would probably switch it if I hadn't. It'd be in the 5 range. So I'm fine with 4.
All right. So, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot to know that in all of this are scandals that have happened with people who are currently seated on
Truly.
The Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But, you know, They get to rule themselves. So yep. We should all just
everything's fine.
Be fine with
I want
it.
To know where those 3 justices I love so much are, why they're not at all saying anything about any
That's
sort of
an
oversight.
That's an interesting point. Why do you think that is the case? Like what?
I know,
they can't be happy with what's happening, right?
I couldn't tell you. They stopped calling me years ago.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But there is, you know, if you use some just like, you know,
I think
speculation.
I mean, honestly, like, at the end of the day, power corrupts, and if you're in a job that pays you...
So you think they're just, like, protecting their own?
Yeah, because they even said... So there was an article I talked to you about, the fact that all 9 justices push back on oversight. They're all saying, we have our own ways of dealing with things. We have our own experts we can talk to about this. No, that's not how it works. The people you deal with is the government. You are one of the 3 branches. Like I said... Checks and balances. You are not above the law. The moment you say we're not going to come, the moment you say we're not going to give ourselves up to being scrutinized, that's your job to scrutinize. And if you're not willing to do that, no,
yeah.
Sorry. That's despicable. And it makes me so angry. It makes me so incredibly angry because it feels like they do bust then. Mm-hmm. Like, I got the job. You like me a lot. I got the job, and now I can do whatever I want. And where does it end? How does it end? How does this end?
I know. I think that's the thing. I was like, okay. So yeah. We're just, once you get appointed, then like.
All bets are off.
All bets are off. You don't have to respond. Like you're not accountable to anyone. And
that's one of the side job perks that is not publicly listed.
They weren't subpoenaed, right? They were just asked to
Yeah, they're just asked to appear.
So that's the only other way to get them is subpoena. I'm sure, but they'll probably be like, this is no good. I'm a judge and I don't have to answer a subpoena.
But it would still have to like put politics aside, put partisanship aside, and like the GOP, at least, from everything, all the reporting I've seen, has not shown any desire to pursue this.
Oh, and they're defending Clarence Thomas big time.
And if this was a flip court, 5-4 in favor of the liberals, the moment they took over the House this past year, it would have been nothing, or this year, it would have been nothing but get them in the room, put them, like, you know, let's impeach them, let's get them, you know, of course they don't care. They're in control of the court right now. They don't have to care. Once again, going back to what we talked about in the segment before, they don't have to care right now. But the moment that the power is switched, oh my God, you better believe they're going to be dragging every single one of those justices by the robe into the room.
All right. Well, when we come back, end of last month, the Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin was announced. And so we're going to be talking to Chelsea Chandler, Clean Wisconsin's Climate, Air, and Energy Program Manager, about that new coalition. So stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Take care of her. Oh, maybe you can spare her several moments of your consideration leading up to the final destination. Oh, the earth is calling.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. He is Greg Bach. And at the end of March, the Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin was announced, and it's a group of 12 environmentally focused organizations who are joining together to push for local and statewide policies that prioritize improving access to clean energy and power sources. And so we invited Chelsea Chandler back, who is Clean Wisconsin's Climate, Air, and Energy Program Manager, to tell us more about the coalition. Welcome back, Chelsea.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So I guess beyond kind of that like tagline, how would you describe what the coalition is planning to do?
Yeah, basically, the coalition represents a broad group of people that are coming together around a unified goal, which is to make Wisconsin carbon-free by 2050, and in the process to shift to a clean and really robust, thriving economy. The transition means that we're, you know, reducing harms to the folks that are currently most burdened by air pollution, that are struggling to pay energy bills, and that are dealing with a lot of the worst impacts of climate change, like extreme heat and flooding. But it also means, importantly, that we want to make sure that all Wisconsinites stand to benefit from the opportunities that this transition to a clean energy economy brings, such as, you know, really good paying clean energy jobs.
And so which, obviously, Clean Wisconsin is one of the 12, but what are the mm-hmm. other groups involved?
Yeah, so we've got a number of founding members that include Clean Wisconsin, the ACE, or the Action for the Climate Emergency, Audubon, Elevate Energy, Healthy Climate Wisconsin, Wisconsin Land and Water, the Nature Conservancy, Renew Wisconsin, Sierra Club, Slipstream, Walnut Way Conservation Corp, and Wisconsin Conservation Voters. So it's basically a bunch of folks that work on climate, energy, environmental justice, and conservation. But those are just the founding members. You mentioned we did hold a public launch at the end of March. And so we definitely invite other organizations to join forces with us. And there's information on our website, which is just cleaneconomywi.com. And folks can just submit a form there if they'd want to get involved.
There's a lot of groups. It's a lot of different people trying to work on this issue, which is great. And so I guess with that, like, was that kind of the driving force of like there's strength in numbers as far as each organization kind of tackles a different part of the puzzle as far as whether it's justice or policy or research or I don't know. So it's like what like kind of how does it fit all together as far as complementing each other's work?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, many of the organizations that are part of the coalition have been working on these issues for a long time. You know, Clean Wisconsin has been around for 53 years.
Yeah.
But we know that sort of our experience and strengths can really complement each other and be more powerful combined. We're bringing together folks with lots of policy experience, people that have kind of more grassroots organizing experience, lived experience and knowledge, and being able to bring together those different skills and insights is really helping us to strategize collectively and kind of rise to the moment, because we know right now really is a crucial moment when it comes to addressing climate change, to ushering in all the opportunity that comes with this clean energy economy. There's tons of federal money right now available through the Inflation Reduction Act, through the bipartisan infrastructure law, and we really don't want to miss out on this opportunity. So it's really time to kind of join forces and making sure that we're maximizing all the benefits that can come into Wisconsin.
So then, I know you kind of said some of the, like, carbon-free by 2050, but, like, there's six main policy goals, right, of the coalition is dedicated to?
Yeah, so we've got basically six priority areas. One is around a healthy economy, and I can dig into that a little bit more, but it's basically supporting efforts and policies that are going to improve health, provide good jobs, help build healthier communities and environment. Another is on environmental justice and infrastructure. We want to make sure that racial and economic justice is really centered in our work. We know that there are communities now that are disproportionately impacted by climate change and other environmental harms, you know, air and lead pollution and things like that. And this coalition is really working hard to help bridge some of the lived experience of those communities that have been overburdened with kind of the arenas where decisions are being made, like in the Capitol, at state agencies and things like that. So the Wisconsin Environmental Justice and Infrastructure Initiative is a really key part of the coalition, and they're working locally with respective community leaders, faith leaders, and actually sharing micro grants and helping to fund awareness and action to address some of those issues. A third area is carbon-free power. We want to work to advance policies that are getting us to 100% carbon-free Wisconsin by 2050 and to get us better energy independence along the way. We know that right now we're sending $14 billion out of state every year for fossil fuels because we don't have coal and gas resources in Wisconsin. So wouldn't it be better to have more homegrown renewable energy, because we have sun here, we have wind here, so we can have solar and wind power, for example. Another area is in home and building repair. So we're advocating for policies to get to 100% zero carbon in new buildings, residential and commercial buildings by 2030, and to reduce energy use in the building sector by half by 2030. So some of that involves phasing out natural gas and promoting more efficient electric appliances and heating and things like that, and helping to reduce energy burden, which is basically the percent of someone's income that they're having to spend towards energy. And we know right now there's a lot of people in Wisconsin that have very high energy burdens and are struggling to kind of meet those basic needs. And then the last two are thriving landscapes. We're a big agricultural state. We know that there's a lot of policies that we and practices that we can promote, incentives that help improve water quality and soil health, and also help keep carbon in the ground where it does good and out of the atmosphere where it causes harm. So we're really excited to be able to promote some of these practices that can really help our rural communities, you know, keep healthy soil, keep farmers in business, and also benefit the climate and all of us. And then the last one is next generation transportation. So we're looking to help accelerate the transition to electric and low carbon transportation. And we've got a goal of having over 50% of new car sales electric by 2030.
Whew. It's like, it's funny because it's only six, but that's a lot of different areas. And like, it's all really important. We're talking to Chelsea Chandler, who is the Clean Wisconsin's Climate, Air and Energy Program Manager. And we're talking about the Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin, which was established at the end of March. And I guess when we say clean economy, it can sound like a buzzword as far as, and so like, what in practical terms to everyday people does a clean economy actually look like? What kind of jobs does that entail?
Yeah, basically, there's a lot of great jobs and economic benefits that come with this. So I can give some examples. A couple of coalition members, Clean Wisconsin, along with Renew Wisconsin, worked on study that did some modeling and looked at, you know, what does the clean economy look like in 2050. And we find that there's, you know, up to $4.4 billion in avoided healthcare costs because of reduced pollution. You're getting, you know, fewer asthma attacks, chronic lung and health, heart illnesses, fewer missed, you know, work days, school days, and things like that. There's also fewer deaths from air pollution by 2050, an increase in gross state product of 3%, and that's going to add about $16 billion to Wisconsin's economy by 2050, and also 68,000 additional jobs. And so those are jobs that are different kind of skill sets, and so there's really something for everybody in that mix. But with all the electrification, we need, you know, more electricians who know how to install heat pumps, for example. We need more folks in manufacturing for, you know, parts for solar and wind turbines. So there really is a variety of great jobs that are part of this package, too. And then it also means lower out-of-pocket costs for fuel and energy. And so that's going to affect everybody. Yeah. And a huge reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. But, you know, basically what this looks like economy-wide is we are powering our lives with more renewable energy, with solar and wind energy. We're using more batteries so that it's reliable. Our buildings and cars are mostly powered with clean electricity. We've got families who are better able to, you know, afford to heat and cool their homes and, you know, have a comfortable living situation. And an agricultural system that is really regenerating the land and building up soil health and helping keep families passing on those farms from generation to generation. So it's a really beautiful vision to work towards. There's all kinds of benefits, you know, from health to economics. So I think it's something that we can all get behind.
So, like, you know, someone like me, I think, is like, sign me up. That sounds great. But
I love it.
I love it. Let's do it. But obviously, it's not that simple. So as far as the landscape of working towards these things, like, is the obstacles that pop up, let's say today, obviously, there's going to be stuff in the future. Is it policy and lawmakers and stuff that needs to change with the laws? Is there still kind of like informational campaigns for consumer buy-in? Like, where is kind of the sticking points right now? Like, I see I feel like every once in a while I see a article pop up about like EV cars, and then they're still like battling the misconceptions around how far you can drive with an EV car before you have to plug in and stuff like that. So is it, I'm assuming it's a little bit of both, but as far as kind of like the landscape right now is, like obstacles or like objections as far as working towards this vision, where are the 12 different groups running into those?
Yeah, it's definitely both of those things. I'd say it's also urgency, because we, in many ways, we're starting to move in this direction, but we're not going fast enough. So, for example, Wisconsin's major investor-owned electric utilities all have carbon-free goals in place, so they want to kind of get to that same destination, but And we're seeing more investments in things like solar farms, which is fantastic, and we support. But we know we're not moving fast enough to get to where we need to be. We're not kind of at the right the pace and scale. So we need to move faster. And we also need to close coal plants faster. Mm-hmm. We need to stop building new gas plants because we can't get to zero carbon if we're still building things that emit carbon. So there is a little bit of that urgency question. Then there's definitely some of the public education piece. I mentioned the Inflation Reduction Act earlier. There's so many great incentives that are part of that federal legislation, but it's hard to navigate for the average consumer. I actually really like Rewiring America has a great IRA calculator. If you just kind of Google those terms, Rewiring America IRA calculator, you'll get to it. You can type in some information about your zip code, like your household income, how many people live in your home, and you'll get a personalized list of incentives, basically everything you're eligible for. And that's things like new and used electric vehicles, installing heat pump, installing solar panel, weatherization. So I feel like that's a really great resource, but we need to do more, you know, as a coalition, you know, the government bodies need to do better of getting that information out to people. We also need to keep educating our workforce, because mm-hmm. we know that this is sort of changing the landscape a little bit. So, you know, our contractors, electricians, we want to folks to be more confident in being able to install things like a heat pump, which can heat and cool your home, and, you know, you're using electricity. But right now there's sort of a gap where there's not a lot of contractors that are actually recommending people install them. So we need to start moving in that direction too. And then, you know, you also mentioned policy, and of course that is a huge deal. There's a lot that we can do with mm-hmm. the federal money we have, with local governments, through the governor's leadership, with, behavioral change and individual action. But there's a ton that we could do, and it would make it so much easier if we had supportive legislation. And that's just not happening at a sufficient level right now.
No, really?
What?
So, what? That's, you know, our job to make fun of it. I'm not trying to put you in a corner.
No, you know, I would love to see more bills that could pass on things like allowing community solar, where we can have, you know, solar farms that everybody can kind of subscribe to and get the benefit if you can't afford to have your own solar panels on your house.
Or absolutely. Unfortunately, Chelsea, we have to cut you off because we're running up against a break. But thank you so much for joining us. This was so informative and fun. We will link all the information for where you can learn more about the Clean Economy Coalition of Wisconsin. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, Chelsea.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah.
I have to imagine circa 2018.
Well, that was a good year.
I think it was around that year.
Yeah.
You had all of your tickets bought to go to Firefest.
Oh, I bought for me, my mom, my sister. I bought one for you before we even had met. I'm like, I'm going to meet a wonderful human who wants to go see some of the best music, including Ja Rule. And I was like, yeah, I got like 50 tickets.
And then somehow, obviously, it didn't work out.
No, and you know, I get it. Things happen. Concerts fall through. You know, sandwiches aren't up to people's par.
You know, bologna sandwiches. You liked them a lot as a kid. As an adult, doesn't really hit the spot.
But you know, hey, man, forgive, forget, move on. Let's, you know, come on. It's a new day.
All those crowds expecting, I don't know, bathrooms and stuff. Jeez.
Hey, you know what? The good Lord.
Accommodations to sleep in.
Jane, I'm going to. Okay, I sense your sarcasm. I just say, the good Lord gave us the ground for a reason. That's to pee and poop on.
Good to know.
Sir, excuse me. This was 2017.
That was a terrible year.
2017, not 2018. But no worries, guys.
Oh, yeah?
Because Fire Festival 2 coming back.
Are you serious? Is it called Fire Festival 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Billy McFarland.
Which just sounds like a made-up name.
Announces Fire Festival 2 is, quote, finally happening following his prison release. Fire Festival 2 is finally happening. McFarland tweeted this week. This was 2 weeks ago. Following his involvement in the original ill-fated festival. And I just want to know who's signing up for this thing. Who's going to fool me once? Well, fool me twice. Can't fool me twice.
Can you explain for the unhip?
You can't fool me again.
Explain for the unhip kids what happened with the first Fire Fest.
So Fire Festival in 2017.
By the way, Fire with a Y.
Fire with a Y was supposed to be a luxury music festival founded by this guy, Billy McFarland, who at the time I think was 26, 27, and rapper
Ja Rule,
or also known as Ja Rule. And it was created with the intent of promoting the company's Fire app for booking music talent. And the festival was scheduled to take place in the spring, on an island in the Bahamas. And at first, like, there was so much buzz about it because it was promoted exclusively on Instagram with like all of these models, like Kendall Jenner and Bella Hadid and Hailey Baldwin and like all these like hot girls.
I know one of those people.
You know, follow the Hot Girl Brigade?
No, that just feels gross.
You know, and many of them didn't disclose that they had been paid to promote this event. They were just like on yachts and like partying and like that's how they were.
Come hang with us.
Yeah. And so cool. It was like the epitome of kind of social media influencer. Look how hot and sexy and like you need to be in the in crowd. Like you're going to be missing out if you're not going to be at this
festival.
It's like
Coachella, but more pretentious.
Yeah. And it was like Coachella in the Bahamas, but the promise of what the accommodations were going to be were a lot. They paid, you know, people were paying hundreds of dollars to like, if not thousands of dollars to be there.
Yeah.
And basically when the people showed up, it was just a disaster. Bum, bum,
there, was, there, was, there was no infrastructure.
There was no infrastructure. And it was basically people were sleeping in tents. There was actually not like bungalows for people. The food was basically like prepackaged sandwiches.
Just Google Firefest sandwich. That's all you need.
Yeah. And so McFarlane went to jail.
Yeah, he did.
And I don't know. Ja Rule did not. Did he get any real ramifications
from
this?
No. He pulled out, I think. I believe, if I'm mistaken, he like pulled out and he ran away before the cops could catch him, essentially.
And so now, guy's out. Guy's trying to get his shine back. But he tweeted out on April 9th, fire emoji. Fire Festival is finally... Fire Festival 2 is finally happening.
Can you really call...
This is the end, the other part of the tweet. Tell me why you should be invited. Invite only,
here's
apparently.
The question is, can we really call it Fire Festival 2 if the first one never happened?
I think that's an excellent point.
It should be Fire Festival 1 redo.
Or Fire Fest 1A.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to go through like the quote tweets, but I can't imagine many people are taking this... seriously,
I mean,
right?
People who perform for the coronation of King Charles are turning this down. Come on now. Let's be serious.
Are we finally getting to the point? Because now, the number of people who've been on Forbes XYZ or like 30 under 30 list who are now in jail or have frauded people out of billions of dollars collectively. And like these, and the same thing with, who am I thinking of? Not Billy McFarlane, but the one that
the Bitcoin
Anna,
dude?
Anna, no.
Oh, yeah, no.
The HBO series.
Becoming Anna?
Not Becoming Anna. Gosh.
Okay. Anna Taylor-Joy?
No, it's the one who, like, she was trying to create, like, a co-working space, and she defrauded a bunch of, like, hedge fund people, and she was, like, there's been so many, and now I can't think of her name. It's the same actress who's in... the Ozarks. Julia something.
Anna Sorokin?
Anna Sorokin, is that?
Anna Delvey.
Anna Delvey, yep. Thank you. You know, it's like there's so many of these people now who just exude enough confidence that they convince people who have money and power to believe in them. They're always so charismatic.
Yeah,
and I'm like, have you met a celebrity before? Have you met an actress? Like, that is charisma. Like, these people are... above mediocre.
They have it.
But it sounds like he's going to do it. I don't know who would fund this guy to put up the money to try to pull this off, but...
Ja Rule, by the way, was officially dismissed from that $100 million class action lawsuit filed by Fire Festival attendees.
Yeah.
So he was cleared of any wrongdoing.
Good job, Ja.
Good job, Ja.
I think, honestly, you're going to find people who... And I don't mean to cast aspersions and I'm not making fun of you right now. You're going to see a lot of people who buy blue check marks on Twitter who are going to be like, I'm down for this. This is exactly what America needs. This is going to be fire.
We have to go to a break, but I'm just going to say this. There's a certain person running for president on the Democratic side who is a little bit of a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, God.
And it was wild. My brother sent me one of his tweets this morning and scrolling through the responses, how many blue check marks I saw.
Oh, yeah.
And now it is like a sign of who, all right, like, oh, this is the kind of person who's responding to this guy's tweet.
They're drinking the blue Kool-Aid.
I say this as a blue check mark holder. All right. When we come back, are you lonely? Because you're not alone if you are. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be back after the news.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.